Catherine sat on the front row, in the centre of the picture, just to the right of Mr. Reed and Miss Murray. It was perhaps a sign of her seniority. As one of the longest-serving employees, she was now a trusted worker who would, on occasion, assume duties above and beyond dial painting. That day, she wore a dark, mid-calf-length dress with a long necklace of black beads. Her feet and hands, as they often were folded neatly together. She wasn't like Marie Becker, who would broadly gesticulate as she made one joke or another. Now, all the girls, the jokers and the quiet ones, the conscientious and the unconcerned, sat still for the photographer. Some hugged each other or interlinked their arms. They sat close together, staring at the camera. And as the shutter closed, it captured them all together, frozen in time for just one moment. The girls of Radium Dial, outside their studio, forever young and happy and well. On the photographic film, at least. Chapter 11. Newark, New Jersey, 1924. Dr. Barry had never had such a busy January. Patient after patient came through his door, pale hands clutched to thin cheeks, discomfort obvious in the women's questioning eyes as they asked him what was wrong. Perhaps worst of all was Marguerite Carlo, who had first come to him on 2nd of January with evidence of a recent tooth extraction that had begun the process of the jaw necrosis he was seeing in so many girls. Catherine Sharp was back again. The newly married Hazel Couser was attended by Barry's partner, Dr. Davidson. Josephine Smith, the Orange Plant's forelady, and her sister Genevieve also sought treatment. Genevieve was best friends with Marguerite Carlo and was extremely anxious for her. In all, to varying degrees, the dentist saw the same mottled condition of the bone. In all, they saw an illness that they knew not how to treat, although they never let the girls see their perplexity. The dial painters would never have had the audacity to question them anyway. "I felt Dr. Barry knew what he was doing," Catherine later said. "I couldn't ask him why my condition didn't improve." Catherine's nerves were still very bad. It was as much as she could do to get through the day, let alone ponder on complex medical matters. For Barry, the sheer number of cases now proved his previous argument that the problem was occupational. He truly believed that phosphorus in the paint was to blame. The symptoms were so like those of Fossey jaw that it had to be the issue. Despite their aching jaws, the Smith sisters were still working in the studio that January. Barry now gave them an ultimatum: quit their jobs or he would refuse to treat them. Josephine Smith ignored him. Yet, on seeing her friend's conditions, she did take some precautions at work. When she weighed out the material for her team, she tied a handkerchief over her mouth and nose to avoid inhaling the dust. Probably because some of the afflicted women were still working in the plant, rumours of Barry's threats soon reached the ears of the USRC managers, somewhat to their annoyance. Business was going well. President Arthur Roeder's company had contracts with the US Navy and Army Air Corps, as well as many hospitals and physicians. Undark was, by now, considered the standard material for government use. Evidently, the firm wanted nothing to get in the way of all these business opportunities. Thus, on hearing of Barry's gossip-mongering, as they probably saw it, they were moved to write to their insurance company in January 1924 to reassure them of the situation. "There recently have been rumours and comments made by individuals, particularly dentists," they wrote, "in which they claim work in our application department is hazardous and has caused injury and poor health to a former operator of ours, probably Marguerite Carlo, and they are advising that other of our operators should discontinue being in our employ."